Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 8th of February. Sunday, February 6th was Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday, and we thought that he was worth another look and more of our attention. A couple of weeks ago, we had his son, Ron Reagan, on, who's written a delightful book about his father, particularly his father's early years. And today, we speak with a professor of history and chair in social and behavioral sciences at the University of Missouri. Robert Collins joins us, who's author of Transforming America, Politics and Culture in the Reagan Years. He says in the intro to the book, in a significant sub-theme of this book, Ronald Reagan takes shape in the following chapters as one of the most consequential and successful presidents of the modern era. Reagan was the sort of history-shaping figure the philosopher of history Sidney Hook once labeled the event-making hero. Such persons' introduction shift the apparent course of history by virtue of their unusual qualities of intelligence, judgment, vision, character, or will. They may be good or bad. Their impact is more profound than that because they are, in a real sense, irreplaceable. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Collins, and I'm sure we will have many this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email, as always, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Professor Robert Collins, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. In doing a bit of reading about Ronald Reagan's early life when his son was on a couple weeks ago, I must say that I was kind of struck by how ordinary everything was. I mean, not completely ordinary, but rather humble beginnings and the kinds of things that many families dealt with, you know, not a lot of money and just sort of commonplace in a way, except for the lifeguard thing. He was one heck of a lifeguard. But the fact that he could rise from this to become president of the United States is really quite something, isn't it?
Yes, I think in some ways his attraction for us is that he seems to be and the embodiment of one version of the American dream, that you can rise from truly humble beginnings and achieve great success.
Somebody has said that he really is maybe it's you who said this, the embodiment of hope. Is he that?
Well, certainly, I think he had a talent for happiness.
Mm.
He had the gift of optimism,
mm-hmm.
and that I think was central to his character. I think it affected his presidential success and caused him some problems, and I think it was a large part of his attractiveness.
You say in the intro to your book that he is one of the most consequential and successful presidents of the modern era. Please tell me why you say that.
Well, Reagan was indeed transformative. I think that he came into office at a time of great trouble in American life. He seemed to lead the United States out of some of its most serious problems, or away from them at least, if not entirely out of them. And he changed the terms of debate. And he cast a very long shadow, and the attempt of subsequent political leaders to get right with Reagan, to somehow establish their claim on or their connection to the changes that he oversaw, I think is testimony to how consequential he was.
And the most important changes, Professor Collins, were what?
Well, he revitalized the American economy. The 1970s were indeed a decade of stagflation, and the American economy was in a sorry state. The last two decades of the 20th century really did constitute a long boom, and he can't claim personal responsibility for that, but he helped it along. He furthered it, and he got out of its way, that was no mean feat.
Mm-hmm. What about, we've spent a lot of time recently talking, of course, about taxes and tax legislation. What were his contributions in this area? Some have said that he started changing the tax code significantly, so taxes for those who were very wealthy among us went down significantly. Is that indeed true?
Yes, it is true, but taxes went down significantly across the board for all Americans, both by virtue of his famous initial tax cut, and then probably a less well-known but really far-reaching tax reform bill that was enacted in 1986. And the chief change was that marginal rates, the tax rate on the last dollar earned, were reduced considerably. The top rate had been 70%, and when Reagan left office, it was, I think, down to 28%. That was, I think, a real contribution. I think many economists would agree that the tax structure that the United States worked with in the 1970s had become a source of inefficiency and friction in the economy.
Did it help spur job growth? How did it contribute to the economic well-being of the country?
Well, you could start a debate on this in a telephone booth, but my feeling is that yes, indeed, it did. It did spur job growth, and the American economy responded to this and other developments in a way that created millions of new jobs in the 1980s and 1990s, and really changed the trajectory of the U.S. economy, which had been flat or maybe even on a downward course in the 70s, and created a boom that President Bill Clinton was able to build upon and further.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that, of course, we think about when we think about Ronald Reagan is the fall of the Soviet Union. I was watching part of a documentary last night on Reagan in which the documentary filmmaker was saying that he really was vitally concerned about this part of the world, but also he really liked Mikhail Gorbachev, and the two of them were able to fashion meaningful change because of the respect they had for each other. Do you think that's true?
I think there's a degree of truth in it, but I think sometimes we tend to wax sentimental mm-hmm. about the affection that these two men had for each other. But the fact is that they got along well enough to establish a real breakthrough in U.S.-Soviet relations, and the world benefited greatly. So, but I think it's possible to exaggerate the significance of the interpersonal camaraderie.
Some have said, and you cite this in your book, that his Cold War triumphs could be chalked up to just good fortune.
Yes, but he was a man who who manufactured his own luck. And in manufacturing your own luck, you're the beneficiary of that. But I do think he played an important role. This is perhaps one of the most debated aspects of his legacy and his presidency. To what degree was he really responsible for the outcome of the Cold War? And I think there's been a lot of exaggeration on both sides of the argument. It does seem to me, though, that he played a critical role. Gorbachev was similarly significant. And the two of them, in a sense, were engaged in an elaborate dance. But it seemed to me, as I looked at the evidence, that it was Reagan who had choreographed that dance. And so I give him a large amount of credit.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We have a number of people who would like to speak with you, so we'll just go to a couple of them right now. Robert Collins is our guest this hour. He's a professor of history and Beiler Chair in Social and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Missouri, author of Transforming America, Politics and Culture in the Reagan Years. Let's start our phone calls with Kevin. Kevin is calling us from Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. How come no one wants to talk about the transformation of President Reagan from the presidency of the Screen Actors Guild to being a General Electric shill to and going through the Screen Actors Guild testimony to the House of Un-American Activities Committee, and then being a shill for GE, and then coming out of that as a candidate for governor, Republican governor of the state of California.
Oh, I'm interested in hearing about how he changed his political ideas. Tell us, please, Professor Collins.
Well, change his political ideas, he did.
Yes, he did.
All right, Kevin's right. He was the head of an important union in Hollywood, and served, I think, as president of that union for three terms, and was an awfully effective leader of the Screen Actors Guild. And he did become a shill for General Electric in the 1950s, and a pretty effective one at that. Reagan underwent a political transformation in the mid-1940s by his own account. He had been what he called a bleeding heart liberal, an avid supporter of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, and in part, he recounted because of the issue of communism in the movie industry and its being intertwined with fierce labor disputes at the end of World War II. He gradually moved to the right, and once he started moving there, and he kept going and moved from a bleeding heart liberal in his characterization to a really staunch small government conservative by the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot made, and I'm wondering if you make anything of this, including from his son a couple of weeks ago, that he was a man who could be personally very, very generous, writing people checks who he thought were down and out when it came to his attention. But in terms of larger issues of poverty and disparity and wealth, et cetera, he just didn't seem to see it, to get it. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a degree of truth in that, but that raises a complicated point, and I think conservatives would argue that conservative positions that are often characterized as cold-hearted and uncaring are not that, but are rather different ways of understanding problems and the presentation of different solutions. It's not that the conservatives don't care about the poor. It's that they have a fundamentally different view from liberals about how best to attack the problems of poverty. And so I think that issue really rests underneath this common characterization of Reagan as personally caring, but politically, sort of bloodless. But the fact is that he could be moved to great personal generosity, but could be staunchly conservative in some of his policy views that did make him vulnerable to the characterization of being uncaring. Mm-hmm. I think he would debate that latter characterization.
So many people were affected and died from AIDS during the time that he was president. He has been roundly criticized for not paying very much attention or devoting the federal resources that were needed to care for people and understand what was going on. Is that deserved criticism?
I think partly it is. I've found myself taking what I thought in my mind was a kind of middle ground position on that whole issue. It seems to me that Reagan can be faulted for not addressing the problem of AIDS more forthrightly, more sympathetically, and earlier than he did. And I think that's a legitimate criticism, that he actually stood in the way of tangible progress in the pursuit of the cure of a disease, it seems to me, is a somewhat more dubious proposition. AIDS, thanks in no small part to a Democratic Congress or a Democratic House, was well funded at the time, given the mystery that surrounded the disease, mm-hmm. and the uncertainty as to how best to spend money to even try to come up with an answer to it. I'm not certain that a lot more money could have been poured into it to great effect early on. I think we tend to forget how mysterious the disease was for as long as it remained mysterious. But I do think that Reagan can be faulted for not... I mean, he was a great communicator, and I think he should have probably used his skills of communication to rally and unify the nation on that matter more than he did. That raises a somewhat larger point, and historians have made the argument that Reagan, and I think wisely so, that Reagan had a sort of sacramental view of the United States. He saw the United States almost in quasi-religious terms, and his invocation of the phrase "city on a hill" was a reflection of that. And I think to the extent that was true, Reagan sometimes had a hard time coming to grips with systemic flaws in American society. And that reluctance or inability to recognize those flaws, I think with the feeling that others brought to that process of seeing was probably heightened by his own optimism. And it seems to me that, on the issue of AIDS and in the area of race, Reagan became a cropper and is vulnerable to criticism in both those areas in similar ways, I think.
We welcome more phone calls for Robert Collins in a moment. We're talking about Ronald Reagan, who, as you well know by now, celebrated his what would have been his 100th birthday on Sunday, just a couple days ago. And we're looking at his place in history, his optimism, whether or not he substantially changed the course of this country, and why everybody refers to him these days. Even the president, the current president, reading books on Ronald Reagan. Here's our phone number. One line is open. You can, of course, use the email possibility as well. The phone number is 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Lee in Duluth is next. Hi, Lee.
Yes, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
You know, I hear your guest, Robert. He stated that Ronald Reagan lowered taxes. He might have lowered taxes for the rich, but he raised taxes on working people. My taxes under Ronald Reagan went up $40 per week. And that was such a rigmarole at my job. The company had to call me. Ronald Reagan raised taxes 6 to 8 times on American people. How can they revise history? You know, it's in the... You know, it's right there in law where he raised taxes. How can they say he lowered taxes?
Professor Collins.
Well, a good point. It is interesting. Reagan, when he first came into office, poured all his attention into an across-the-board tax cut bill, which did cut taxes across the board for 3 years. And almost immediately found that he was facing a yawning deficit that he and his advisors had not fully anticipated. In part, they did not account fully or correctly for the drop in inflation that the administration helped to engineer. And so in the face of a yawning deficit, and the deficit grew mightily under Reagan, it tripled over his 2 terms in office. The national debt did. Reagan was forced on a number of occasions to agree to tax hikes, and he did agree to a number of tax increases, but those tax increases never touched the marginal rate, and the marginal rate, the reduction in the marginal rate, the last dollar paid by people all across the economic spectrum, was the key to supply-side economics, and that he held out as sacrosanct. And so although he did agree to tax increases, and people, his champions, point to this as evidence of his pragmatism, he was fixed in his devotion to supply-side economics, and so the marginal rates never did increase. And I think that if we go back and look at the aggregate statistics on the income tax, that in fact Americans across the board paid less income tax paid income tax at reduced rates during the Reagan administration.
Thanks, Lee, for the call. We go next to Glenn from Manitowoc. Hi, Glenn.
Oh, good morning. And I'm going to try to be brief and broaden the conversation. I hear, historically speaking, face up, I'm a liberal and a blue collar. I look at Reagan and what I term as near hero worship of him recently, and yet I look at him as, in the long term, being symptomatic of the destruction of our country. I look at World War historically. I look at World War II. It was this country's industrial capability that saved the world from fascism. I see since Reagan's time when we're going to go to a service economy and go away from a productive economy. I see a collapse of the industrial capability that we once had. I see huge gaps in the wealth disparities. That's been well covered by Wisconsin Public Radio. I see more divisive politics and wedge issue and manipulative propaganda ever since Reagan, especially with the extreme Holy Right. I look at the lack of bipartisanship that has engendered. As far as his tax cuts, he introduced for the first time a tax on people that could least afford it, referring to unemployment insurance tax. He split Social Security and Medicare, raised taxes on both. My class really took a major hit. Nobody seemed to pay attention when the blue-collar jobs were going overseas. We were talking about retraining. Okay, fine. A lot of people went to school. A lot of people got educated. You look at this recent economic downturn. Now what? What do people retrain for now? I see, historically speaking, I see China as becoming the next superpower. And what are we going to be able to do about it other than hand them a credit card and ask them if they want fries with that? I can go on for an hour, and I better not.
All right, Glenn. Thanks very much for the call. Professor Collins.
Well, unfortunately, I find myself agreeing with much that Glenn has said. My only rejoinder, I guess, is that I don't think that I think that any claim that Reagan solved all problems in perpetuity is exaggerated. I think Reagan solved some problems. Other problems, new problems, have come up during his time and since. Some problems he left unaddressed. Some he perhaps exacerbated a bit. My final accounting found that, on the whole, I thought he was a successful president. But problems in American life remain. I think Glenn and I could debate on how much Reagan and his administration were responsible for some of the problems.
How did the assassination attempt on him pretty early on in the first term change him, if at all, and change the country?
I think the assassination attempt was important. He was only in office a matter of months. I think it gave him a sense that he had been given another chance, and that he wanted to use that chance. Reagan was actually, in my estimation, a very spiritual man, a religious man, although he was condemned for not going to church during his presidency. I was struck when I read his correspondence about how often he invoked God and a sense of divine purpose, and this was not for public consumption. This seemed to be built into the core of his personality. His mother had been an exceedingly religious woman and had had a very great influence on him, and so I think if anything, the assassination attempt focused Reagan's mind on the achievement of a few big things, and he really dedicated himself to making that difference. In political terms, it was sheer gold, because Reagan behaved in the aftermath of that attempt, I think, as many Americans would like to think they would behave. Truly graceful under great pressure. And public opinion responded and rallied to his side at a very crucial time in his presidency, when he was still engaged in the fight to get his economic package approved. And the Reagan forces took full advantage of this upswell in public sentiment and affection. So I think the assassination attempt was important both politically and personally.
Bill in Madison, hi. Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
I personally, you know, I one of the other callers sort of stole some of my thunder, but your guest mentioned that the economy picked up a lot in the 80s and the 90s, but in point of fact, for the middle class and lower classes, it's actually remained stagnant and actually gotten worse. I mean, the economy has picked up greatly for the top people, especially lately. But over the last 40 years, middle class has taken a hit. His policies have set us on the road towards basically the takeover of America by, you know, big business and the dismantling of the middle class. I mean, I just don't understand this hero worship of him. I think he's not responsible for where we are right now, but he certainly set us on the path towards where we are right now.
Professor Collins.
Well, this is the stuff of debate. We could go round and round, and I guess I would urge listeners to pick the economic criteria of success that they think are most meaningful, and to trace those criteria statistically over time. When I did that, I was surprised, and I did not come to the writing of my book a fan of Ronald Reagan. I left the writing of the book not a hero worshiper, but a believer that Reagan had been a consequential and, by my lights, successful president. But I just invite listeners to take a look at the statistics and reach their own conclusions.
We have to spend some time on the Iran-Contra scandal, where the president said that he would never deal in arms to get hostages returned. That is what happened. There is debate remaining as to how much he knew about all of that and was actively participating in that decision. What did you find?
Well, I found that Reagan was up to his eyeballs. He was the prime mover in the arms for hostages side of Iran-Contra, the Iran side of it. And Reagan was often criticized for being a hands-off president. And he was, and that could get him into trouble, but that was an instance where, ironically, he was hands-on. He went against the advice of many of his major helpmates and pressed ahead, just insisting that something could be made of this opening with Iran. And he was full of good intentions, it seems to me. But Ronald Reagan made a career of arguing that good intentions were not enough. And the Iran side of Iran-Contra proved that contention has some merit, that good intentions aren't enough. And Reagan, I think, fooled himself by some sort of spin that he put on the transaction into thinking that he wasn't really exchanging arms for hostages, but it was close enough to that so that no one was willing to pay attention to a distinction that increasingly he was the only one willing to make.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't appear that he did know about the details of the Contra end of the deal. And to the extent that he was out of that loop, I think he was saved from what might have been more dire political consequences.
Impeachment is what you're meaning?
Well, I'm not certain that it would have come to impeachment, frankly. I mean, it does seem to me that we have to remember that Iran-Contra followed not all that long after Watergate. And I think the appetite of the American public, as opposed to the appetite of Reagan's critics, for impeachment was probably less than some people remember. Also, it was an area, national security, where I think since really the end of World War II, Americans have proven themselves, perhaps to their detriment, to be more than willing to cut the president some slack. And so I think these realities probably made impeachment less real of a threat than I think some people remember.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bill, for the call. Bob in Eau Claire, hi.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Bob?
I'm pretty good. I am no fan of Ronald Reagan, and my primary concern with the 8 years that he was at the helm was he individually and completely dismantled all environmental initiatives that have been undertaken, not just during the Carter administration, but even environmental initiatives that have been undertaken by Nixon. Nixon was by far, for all of his flaws, a staunch environmentalist by comparison to Reagan. And we are still trying to catch up with the lost opportunities that had been taken by Mr. Reagan. And for that alone, I think he should sink into ignominy.
Professor Collins.
Well, ignominy is a strong word and a dire place to be. Reagan was conservative. There's no getting around that. And liberals and conservatives are always going to argue about some things, probably in the nature and extent of environmental regulation is one of them. And if we score Reagan only by the criteria of liberal desires, he will come up short. There is little doubt.
We pause for a moment and pick up more phone calls and emails, too. If you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@wpr.org. Our phone number, one line is open for you, is 800-486-8655. We're talking about Ronald Reagan, this hour of the program, who would have turned 100 on Sunday of this week. And our guest is Robert Collins. He's the author of Transforming America, Politics and Culture in the Reagan Years. He is a professor in history and social and behavioral sciences at the University of Missouri. More phone calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about a couple of presidents this week. For those of you who love presidential discussions, Thursday at 10, a president who was considered by many historians to be among our worst, if not the worst, Andrew Johnson. A book has been written about him and recently, and so we'll talk about him on Thursday at 10. Back to phone calls. This hour, it's Ronald Reagan, Robert Collins, professor of history and social and behavioral sciences at the University of Missouri, is our guest. And our next caller is Mike from Baraboo. Hi, Mike.
Yes, hi. I don't know if you gave credit to it. HBO had and PBS had two different programs about Reagan.
Yes.
I was wondering, you know, I believe he never did cut, reduce government at all, only increased it for defense. That's one thing that he kept talking about, you know, big government and how to, and he's going to reduce it. Second thing, he had a tremendous chance to, with Gorbachev to get rid of all nuclear on both sides, but he wouldn't give up Star Wars. Now, I think it was a huge opportunity. I'm wondering if he was a little bit more informed from the science community at the time or his scientists that this, you know, Star Wars ended up being just a big nothing. But it shows what a tremendous opportunity that would have been. And if it wasn't for Gorbachev being a reasonable man, Russia could have kept going on the way they were for another couple decades. So anyway, I'll just
okay.
So what do you think of that?
All right. What do you think of that, Professor Collins?
Well, I think Gorbachev should deserve, he's a world historical figure, and he deserves a lot of credit for his actions at the end of the 1980s. There's a lot of ruin in a nation, it has been observed, and indeed it might be the case that the Soviet Union could have lurched on acted more irresponsibly than it did at the end of the Cold War. And So I count us lucky, and I'm more than willing to give Gorbachev and the Soviet leadership great credit on those counts. Restraining government, the fact is that Reagan was not entirely successful in his. Attempt to rein in government, reduce the size of government, and Milton Friedman had a funny line about that. He said that the only thing that Reagan accomplished was taking galloping socialism and turning it into creeping socialism. I think Reagan would probably say that he restrained the drift in the direction of a European social welfare state that America seemed to be on the course of in the 1970s, and he would probably take some satisfaction in that. On the Star Wars matter, it seems to me that the jury is probably still out on that. We do have a nascent anti-missile system, which the Obama administration is negotiating to put into place, and it seems to me that we don't know the degree to which that is the ultimate outcome of the Star Wars initiative. So I'm not certain that the final word on Star Wars has been written, but the caller, Mike, is right that there was a moment when it seemed that Reagan and Gorbachev might go beyond reductions in nuclear arms to the elimination of nuclear arms. I think on the other side of that, it ought to be said that Reagan oversaw the elimination of one entire category of nuclear weaponry, intermediate nuclear forces, and began the negotiation that led to the first arms control had been aimed at arms control, that is, limiting the further growth. But nobody until Reagan had been able to achieve absolute reductions, and that is some achievement.
Thanks, Mike. Wayne Holman is next. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Wayne.
I'm really enjoying this, and your guest is really a fair, objective observer of all of this. By the way, Kathleen, a sidebar, my son's been invited out to try out for varsity at UWL. I thought you'd get a kick out of knowing that.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I guess I'd like to ask the professor. Now, I'm a supporter of Ronald Reagan. I'm saddened that you aren't getting any calls from people who admire him, but I did. And my specific question to your honored guest, when he was laid to rest, particularly when people could view his casket at the Tundra, and I think he had a few other sites where visitation was allowed, it seems to me they were blocks long as far as lines of people waiting to pay respects. And am I correct in saying that, from your perspective, both the left and the right, both conservatives and liberals, came to honor this man? Or is that incorrect?
Well, it's a fascinating phenomenon. I think Reagan truly has become iconic to the extent that both the left and the right want to get right with Reagan. The right claims him as their own, and the left wants to somehow get under the Reagan mantle, because I believe there's a sense that the affection for Reagan is indeed very widespread, and so he's become one of those figures that all of us want to claim some part of, and there aren't many figures in American history or life who enjoy that kind of stature. And to the extent that that's true, it seems to me that he has grown in depth, as it were.
The left just wants to learn some of his jokes, right? He was a funny guy.
He was a funny man. And
yes, he was.
He used humor really
very
really
effectively.
Well.
Very effectively. Never underestimate how important that is in our lives or in our politics. And a lot of people just don't have very much of it.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. And it can really help.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Wayne. And congratulations again to your son and to you. Hugh from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm old enough to remember the horrors of the Carter inflation. You know, somebody called earlier saying that you had to pay $20 more in taxes. Well, under Carter, he was earning 20% less because of inflation. The inflation was horrendous, destroying the economy. And Reagan, whatever your politics, saved the American economy. He also set the stage for ending the Cold War. These are two very important things. He saved our economy, and he did his best to destroy the evil empire that had made, and its dictatorships in Eastern Europe. Did he do everything that conservatives want? No. He, for example, the education department, what a waste on the federal level. He did not end it. He should have. Did he end affirmative action? No, he didn't do that. Somebody says our jobs were being lost under Reagan. Well, it's true, but ever since the end of World War II, we have had a trade policy which has allowed our corporations to move jobs to cheaper countries. It's not just Reagan's fault or Carter's fault or Nixon's fault or Eisenhower and so forth. Look at it's a long-term problem. And the It's about time people realize that Nixon was a liberal, not just on ecology, but affirmative action. He made it a national policy. It's Nixon.
All right. Let's. He's for another day. We are out of time. Robert Collins, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
I've enjoyed it greatly, and thanks to the callers.
Yes, they're good callers, aren't they? I like our callers. Robert Collins helping us mark the 100th birthday of Ronald Reagan, which happened on Sunday of this week. He is a professor of history and Beiler Chair in Social and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Missouri, author of Transforming America, Politics and Culture in the Reagan Years. Just a reminder, the discussion of Andrew Johnson, considered by many to be a really bad president, will be Thursday at 10 o'clock. As we continue looking at presidents every now and then. I love these hours. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Great conversations ahead.